Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. I am your host. My name is Hannah Norris. And I'm here, as always, with my husband,
Carl Donnelly.
Hey, I was going to give you more introductions then. Okay. I was going to say a birth partner, mate,
yeah,
friend.
Yeah.
Carl Donnelly.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So this is a podcast about pregnancy. We're here. This is episode 33. Over the course of my pregnancy, we've been recording every week, yes, talking to guests and each other.
Started at week
six.
Six.
While we didn't know anything about pregnancy.
Yeah.
We're now at week 38. And it's been so interesting and useful for us that I think we've become a little bit experts and taken a whole lot of tips from our guests and really got guidance throughout the whole thing.
Loads of birth stories.
Yep.
Been given loads of great tips for during pregnancy, during birth, in the initial phases after birth.
Yeah, and books that we've read and kind of talked to each other about and things like that. So yes. I hope if you've been listening along that you've been enjoying it and finding it informative like we have as well. Like I said, we're at week 38 now. And I did say last week that we were going to be joined by a guest,
by Felicity Ward,
which we were excited about because we spoke to her back when I was 8 weeks pregnant and she was 38 weeks pregnant. But there's a slight change of plan and we're joined by a very special guest.
Very special guest.
And that's our baby.
Yeah. we are joined by the newest member of the clan.
The Keith Cheggers podcast family.
Yeah, and the clan by clan, I meant the Donnelly clan. Sound like we've just been joined by a little racist.
Yeah.
No, we've been, we had a bit of a surprise.
Her name is Twyla.
Twyla.
And she's asleep on my lap right now.
Yes, and she is 1 week old.
Yeah. So this is cheating a bit because it's a couple of days officially after week 38, but we still thought we'd... Well, we just decided we'd record.
Well, we might as well. Do you know what I mean? We sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be quite fun.
Because one of the things we learnt during this whole time is like a baby can come out and is viable between week 37 to week 42.
It was viable long before that. But in terms of when they give you a window of due.
Yeah.
You know, when they sort of say, it's between 37 and...
Yeah, 42.
Yes.
So the due date they give you is about week 40.
Yes.
So that's what we've been working towards with our episode plans and things like that.
So we planned to go right up to episode 35. Yeah,
until the baby was born.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, she's here a bit early, but we thought we'd share my birth story, our birth story, and kind of the fact that she's here with us. And potentially... If things don't get, if our brains don't turn to total
mush. We're currently just about holding this conversation
we
together.
We have not had a conversation like this for,
for a week.
Since we last recorded. But anyway, so week 38. It was on the day of week 38. I woke up that morning and I went to the toilet and I saw a little bit of pink.
Yes.
Like a little kind of bit of tissue or something, very pale pink. And I was like... that's interesting.
Is that the one you called me in to look at? Or was that the day before?
I think the day, I can't remember. Maybe it was the little pink one. Yeah.
Yes.
So just kind of banked that in my head. And that day I had an appointment with the haematologist and the obstetrician because I've been on the steroids.
Yeah.
Been on the roids.
Been on the roids for your platelets.
For a couple of weeks. So I went in to see them and it seemed like they were working and the platelet levels were going up.
Yes.
But they still wanted to check back in the following week and they started throwing around induction and things like that and potentially having to go down that route. They asked me where I wanted to have the baby and I was like, well, you know, we're talking about home birth and then birth center, and the haematologist just shook her head and went, no, it's going to be in the labor ward, because they needed to have me monitored in case with low platelets, what can happen is that you lose a lot of blood because the platelets help your blood to clot. So they said they need to have me monitored. And because they weren't sure if the drop in my platelets was due to pregnancy or a immuno thing, ITP, autoimmune disorder.
Yes.
ITP, like thrombocytopenia, some word like that. Now it's, I haven't said that many syllables.
In the state of tiredness we're in, I don't think you should be trying to pull one of those words out
but
of
the thing.
Your hat.
You can say hat, that's a syllable, yeah, that's, one syllable yeah. word. So if it was an immuno condition, potentially our baby would also have it. And therefore, it meant that if there were types of interventions, they wouldn't be able to do, like, you wouldn't be able to use Vontus.
Yeah.
Can't do forceps. It's like something like high forceps they couldn't do, but they could do low forceps.
Yeah.
And if I was to have an epidural, my platelets would need to be above 70. If I was going to have a cesarean, I think they needed to be above 50.
Yes.
A normal platelet level is 150 to 450 something or others. Just like we all know, a normal cervix is 3 centimetres. So my platelets were about 70-ish, which was good. It meant that I would be able to have both those things, but they didn't know if they were going to drop. So I said, okay, you know, if that's going to be something that happens and it has to be an emergency cesarean or an emergency epidural or something, then I understand. But they're not my choices for the birth. And I was a bit worried about the labor ward. I had a real vision in my mind about white rooms and single beds and kind of very fluorescent lighting and things like that. And I asked if I could go and have a look at it. And they said, well, because of COVID rules at the moment, there's no visitors allowed. But they said it's exactly the same as the birth center, which we had visited.
Yes.
It was on the floor above. And she's like, it's exactly the same. It's like wooden floors. And you can look out over the prison.
Yeah. we'll explain that. It's Queen Charlotte's, in case anyone hasn't listened to all the episodes where we talked about where we would go in.
Oh, and we walked there for the appointment that day. And we walked across Wormwood Scrubs, which is a big open parkland.
Which is much nicer than it sounds.
Mm-hmm. But I was saying to Carl that I did have visions of walking to the birth.
When you were in labour.
Yeah.
Because it's about a 25-minute walk from our house.
Yeah.
It's a horrible walk for the first half. Because you just walk down Scrubs Lane, which is quite an industrial area. And then you get to Wormwood Scrubs and suddenly you turn off Scrubs Lane and you're just in this massive heath, essentially, aren't you?
Yeah.
So it's a weird, you know, it comes out of nowhere. Oh, she's trying to make some noises.
And just had visions of like me crawling across the scrubs, being ready to give birth. But we didn't. Guys, we didn't do that. That's not a spoiler alert, but we didn't. And so we had that hospital appointment and then we went and visited a couple of friends at a social distance and walked up to Notting Hill to go and get a falafel that I'm obsessed with and then came home. Now, that Friday night was also the night of a Sagittarius full moon. I'm a Sagittarius and it was Gemini, like this time of year.
Of course.
Is Gemini. So I figured I'd need to do some sort of moon ritual just to welcome in that Sagittarian full moon into my life.
Yeah.
So we...
I don't know if you've mentioned... Have you mentioned any of your weird moon rituals on here before? If we save it to the last... potentially the last episode.
It's like I'm a cult leader and I've just sucked you all in. I'm like,
but it's nothing, not weird. It's nothing crazy. It's just, you know, sitting in a garden with some candles and writing some...
intentions.
Intentions.
And you burn stuff and you release stuff.
Yes.
Or on a new moon, you kind of... manifest or just think about stuff that you want to invite.
And you've done one before you were
I
pregnant.
Did. When I was doing IVF, Lou Sanders and I sat on the banks of the Thames and like did a full moon ritual.
Yes.
Because she was doing a gig and I was working there as well and we set some stuff on fire. But so that ritual was about creation.
Yes.
For me. And then I did one with my mum as well when she was here.
Yeah, how did she feel? Was she
liked it.
Was she into it?
Yeah, she's into it. I just say, Mum, I'm going to go be witches for a sec. Sit in the garden. So I said to Carl that I wanted to do one that night.
Yes.
So we went outside with some candles.
Sat in the grass.
Yeah, Carl looked up a couple of things online, didn't
he? Yeah, there was a thing where... if you rub your belly clockwise with the moonlight on it, it's meant to speed up the...
Yeah.
The birth.
We got a bit of moonlight on some water.
Yeah, so we just did, like, basically, you said you wanted to do it. I said, I'm up for that. So I found a few things. We went and did it that night. Yeah.
Then
I was going to say, and that was, you know, that was still 2 weeks before the due date.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, like, I didn't want an induction. That was a main thing.
Definitely.
And I've said all the way along, I'm like, I think she's going to come early. I just had a feeling that she was going to be here earlier.
Even though everyone says first baby.
Yeah, they're like, no way.
Late.
And then when we came inside, I got our like Polaroid camera out and I was like, Carl, take a photo of me. And then I took a photo of him on the sofa. And because I've been saying the whole time, I'm like, I want some really nice photos. But I just had a feeling that I had to take him now.
Yeah.
And I took all my clothes off and I lay on the sofa next to our nice jungle of plants. And I was like, take one of me here.
Yeah, so I had to take a nude Polaroid.
Yeah, twice. You had to take two of them.
Yeah.
And put them to one side, went to bed. Woke up at 4:45 the next morning, I think. Went to the toilet. And then in the toilet, it was like exactly the same kind of discharge as the day before. But this one was dark red. And I was like, okay,
this
I think is happening. And I can't remember if it was then I felt a sort of dull period pain type ache. But I basically went to bed, read some things. And about 7:15, I remember feeling like, okay, yeah. There's something going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And saying to Carl, I think something's happening. You were fast asleep. You went, oh, and then went back to sleep. And then I think we got up about 8:30.
Yeah.
And
you sort of did say, I think there is something happening.
Yeah.
But you even like you still were had a slight uncertainty to your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You I think were thinking this could be a little tester.
Yeah.
What Braxton Hicks.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So yeah, but so we sort of left it and we started just tidying. I went and just double checked the birth.
Yeah,
the hospital bag. And made some food.
Yeah, I was determined on getting a nice breakfast.
Yeah, so we made a lovely breakfast and like, it was really chilled. And then it got to about, I reckon it was 10:30 when you said to me, I think we should check the.
Did you download that app?
I hadn't, but I did then download, which I forgot.
Like 9:30.
Yeah, what was the app called?
It was the Positive...
Positive Birth Companies.
Yeah, Millie Hills.
Yeah, they've got an app you can download which measures contraction times. And this was about 10:30, 10:45.
Earlier than that.
When I started 9:30. Timing it.
Yeah, I reckon.
No, we weren't timing it then.
Okay.
Well, because it's literally the first time I timed it.
Yeah.
It said you're in labour.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was that.
Maybe, yeah.
It might have been. For some reason, I just thought it was sort of about, you know, 40. What time did we go to the hospital?
Oh, that's going to ruin it, isn't it?
Oh, sorry. But basically...
11:30 we got there.
Okay, so I thought it was only about 45 minutes before that we found out that you were in labour.
Yeah, maybe. But I'd walk around and Carl would... I'd say to Carl, oh, I think this is one. And so he'd press
it. I'd hit the button. And then I'd just wait for you to
tell me it's
gone.
Oh, yeah, I think it's gone. And then there'd be ones that I'd just sort of let pass and I didn't even tell you that they were happening.
But anyway, the app was telling me quite categorically that you were in labour based on the fact that you were having three contractions within 10 minutes. And they were all 45 seconds at least.
And the other thing we hadn't done was actually finish the birth plan.
No, so yes.
I had notes on my computer and was just like, Carl, can you tidy these up for me, please?
Yeah, so basically I'd made breakfast, I was timing your contractions and I was writing the birth plan while you were in labour.
Walking around.
Yeah.
So we printed that up.
Yeah.
And then we kind of went, okay, I'll call the hospital. So I called them and said, look, I'm 38 weeks pregnant and I think something's happening. Like I think I might be having contractions. And she basically said, first baby, second baby. And I went, first baby. And she said, call back when they're intense.
Yeah.
I said, okay, and hung up. Then walked around for a bit longer.
Yeah, yeah.
While Carl kept timing.
But that's the thing is, obviously, I think they are programmed to say that because they're used to people slightly panicking.
Yeah.
And that's, I totally understand that. We've heard a lot of those stories. But I think I knew full well that you've got, because you don't really, you've got quite a high pain threshold with things like period pains and stuff. I know that from the past. I was convinced you were fully in labour.
The other thing was as well with the seeing the haematologist the day before, what they told me about was that potentially with the extra amniotic fluid that I had was when my waters break, what could happen was that the cord could fall out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A cord prolapse, I believe they call it.
Yeah. So when that happens, it means that then the cord can kind of dry out on the outside and the nutrients from the placenta don't get to the baby. So it's quite, and it's an emergency situation.
Yes.
So if that, whenever my waters broke, was my advice was you have to go straight to the hospital rather than that thing of riding it out and being at home and just taking it really cruisy and having to be there within 24 hours, I think, is the advice before that. It was like, if that happens, you have to go.
Well, yeah, it's if your waters break and you don't start having contractions within the 24 hours, like if you're not actually going into labour, then, yeah, you have to go in, because that's when it's dangerous otherwise.
Whereas if my waters broke, and if the cord does prolapse, anyone, you just have to get on your hands and knees and just call the ambulance straight away. And then if you're in the hospital, they deal with it there.
They put it back in, don't they? Yeah. They pop it back up.
They shove it back in. So I was more aware of that, like the fact of getting to hospital was more important than perhaps we had initially planned. So then Carl called back.
I called back because I was like, right, I'm timing these. And I know the nurse at the other end is thinking that you're overplaying it or you're a first time pregnant person and you're like, just, you know, it's caught you off guard how strong the contractions are.
Yeah.
So, but I called her, like, I'm gonna say it straight and I just said, look, I'm timing them, she's had three in the last 10 minutes, they've all been 45 seconds to a minute and they're strong, and I said it with enough commitment, I think she went, okay, come in, and it was like, right, let's do this.
And so Carl downloaded a Black Cabs app. We hadn't particularly decided how we were getting there either.
No.
So he downloaded the app because Black Cabs can take you to the hospital.
Well, they've got no issues with
insurance.
Well, basically Addison Lee won't take somebody to the hospital if you're in labour because they say that their insurance don't cover any issues.
Mm.
But most taxi firms are fine.
Yeah, minicabs as well.
Minicabs are fine.
But when you went to get a taxi, there was none in the area.
Couldn't get any taxis, yeah. So I ended up just getting an Uber and just thinking, this is not tell him.
Yeah.
I just said to you, just, can you be quiet in the taxi?
I was really quiet the whole way.
You were, because we were still checking on the...
Yeah, that's right. I just gave you
contractions,
a head nod.
And there was one where you went, because I could see before we left, they were strong, you know, but you were just walking them off and you were breathing through it.
Yeah.
And in the taxi when you had them, I could see you were just looking out the window with that 1,000-yard stare, just breathing.
I wasn't particularly doing hypnobirthing. I feel like I really went into my acting techniques and breath and voice work and things like that. That's where I went to, which is very, very connected to hypnobirthing and breathing exercises.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, that was where I was at with breath work and things. But we got to the hospital, went in up to maternity triage.
Yes.
On the third floor. The woman let me in. Again, Carl couldn't come in because of COVID.
Outside.
And there was two beds there, and both the beds were taken. And she's like, okay, well, you just have to wait. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So I was just in this kind of little waiting room having contractions, surges. And she managed to clear those two women out of the beds.
Yeah.
And then said, come through and to do an examination on me.
I saw one of them women. They came out. And that's when I realised why people get told to hold out a bit longer. Because like both of them definitely were not as much in labour as you.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd already been there. They were already there getting checked in. Like,
yeah.
And so when one of them walked past me just on the phone, and she was like, she was not in, she had 2 days left probably.
Yeah.
So actually, I think seeing them as well made me realise I had then got this instinct that you were quite in labour.
Yeah.
They weren't going to go, yeah, you're sort of, you know, you're whatever. You're probably going to be here for another 24 hours or something. I thought you were going to come out and tell me, oh, right, yep, we're in
business.
Which
is what happened. She checked me and I was 5 centimetres dilated.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, we're going to just go back out into the corridor with your husband and we'll get you sorted. We'll get a room sorted. So I texted a couple of friends, maybe just my family and like three friends. I was okay, 5 centimetres dilated at the hospital.
Yes.
It's going to happen. Oh, and the other thing was that we had planned a Zoom party
for the Sunday.
So this is a Saturday and I had this thing that I really wanted to just get together with my friends before having the baby, which if it wasn't, if we weren't in lockdown, we would have had a big barbecue the week before, kind of a party. I would have had a party in Australia, which we didn't get to have. So I really wanted to see everyone. So I'd sent out these invitations for like a Zoom catch up on the Sunday at 11 a.m. and another one at 8 p.m. so we could cover the time zones of the UK, LA and Australia. Yes. Sent out to, you know, 100 people or something like that. And yeah, so then I only just texted a couple of friends and was like, look, I think it's happening. We got shown into the Labour ward and it was beautiful.
Well, yeah, because it was mad. They took us into, it was a lovely room and really chilled where you had your own bathroom.
Yeah.
And there was like a nice little corner chair for me and it was, I started setting up.
And that tip from Hattie to say that you were happy to have a student midwife.
Yes.
We did it. I had written it on my birth plan.
I think that turned out to be one of the biggest, best tips we had the whole time.
Because then we just had a student midwife, Amelia, with us the whole day.
And she was really calm. And I think what I really liked about her, she sort of, she let us set the tone.
Yeah.
And she just chilled and just, when it was times when it was just no one was talking, you were just walking around and doing your thing. Oh, and I was just sitting there, I was putting music on, I was getting you water, I was doing whatever, I was just doing the things like to let you in your headspace go about what you were doing.
One thing I hadn't planned was what I was going to wear, because I was wearing a Motley Crue t-shirt and some leggings that were fluorescent purple and blue leopard print. Hello, world.
Yeah. That Motley Crue t-shirt has seen some shit now.
So we're in that room and then there's the midwife, Emma, who was lovely as well.
Yes.
She came in at one point wearing a mask and she's like, I'm just wearing this because I've eaten salami.
Yeah.
Not because of COVID. And I was like, well, thank you, because I'm a vegan and I really respect you respecting me like that. And quite early on, we were in that room for, I don't know, 10 minutes?
Yeah, I just
started
setting up. I was getting everything out of the bag and putting crystals, bloody setting up speakers and stuff. And then
they said, were you interested in having a water birth? And I was like, well, yeah, definitely interested in having the option. And she's like, well, the pool room's free.
Yeah.
I was like, cool. Immediately, my Australian brain thinks about the film The Castle, where there's everything that goes straight to the pool room. If there's something special, they go, oh, it's going to the pool room. It's going to the pool room. And I was like, yes, let's go to the pool room. So we got, Carl had to pack back up.
We got bumped up. We got upgraded.
Taken down the corridor to, my God, like the presidential suite.
It was, and this is a Labour ward. Like this is,
a Labour ward at a public hospital on the NHS.
This is how swanky it was.
Oh my God.
It wasn't until 2 days after when I said, how lucky are we that we ended up in the birth centre?
Yeah.
Because I thought that was what it was. And then you explained to me, no, that was, it was the maternity version of the birth centre pool room.
Yeah.
It was massive.
Yeah.
It had an inbuilt light system.
Yeah.
Where it was like mood lighting that changed
colour.
That's
right. They said to me, do you want dark or bright light? I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And I just went dark.
And they just turned on this system and it meant it's like sort of this constant flowing dark colours.
Dark blue and amber. And there was murals all on the walls of like a seascape and macaws and trees. There was a huge pool.
Well, there was a massive pool, bed next to it.
Yeah.
Chair.
That bed was like a floor bed, like a couple of mattresses.
And then you had the big sort of, over the other side of the room, you had the actual hospital style bed. And that's where you had the monitors and stuff. So you actually had like, there was so much room to just mooch around.
Yeah, it was like, when you go to a hotel and you get an upgrade and the room's much better than what you planned. Yeah. You've got loads of space. And Carl had, I reckon I'm going to make Carl put his hypnobirthing playlist available on Spotify.
Yeah.
Because it was amazing.
I mean, what I'll do, I'll change it to hypnobirthing Keith Jeggers.
Yeah.
Because no one's ever going to search for those words.
Yeah.
But if you search for it, having heard it, those words now, it should come up. I'll make it public.
Yeah. Because it basically felt like we were at a day spa.
It did.
But at the same time, I was walking around making some good noises and breathing. And they attached me because they wanted to monitor me. I had a thing that, like a little circle thing that was on my stomach that could measure her heartbeat and one that measured my contraction. So I just had, they were kind of elastic bands around them on my waist.
Yeah.
They were really unobtrusive and they meant I could go in the water with them as well.
Yeah.
And just walked around and realized it was all happening.
That was a really, because obviously then it was up on the screen.
Yeah, the midwife, we could see the heartbeat.
Being able to see both heart rates and the contraction strength
Yeah.
was really, I found that really, made me feel like I was understanding what you were going through much more than just watching you. Not that I was watching it all the time, but like just because I could, what would happen is obviously I could see the regularity of them.
Yeah.
And I could also see when they were going through a period where they were really strong.
Yeah.
And I could see how you were reacting, and I don't know, it just made it more, gave it more of a context. Yeah,
it made more sense. Like there was one point I went and sat on the bed and went really into a very zen place.
That was
weird. I just breathed really deeply and they slowed right down.
I was looking at the screen and it was like they were, and they got further apart.
Yeah.
It was like you'd almost put it on pause for for 10, 15 minutes.
But then knowing that and seeing that on the screen, I was like, oh, that's not the plan.
No.
And kind of moved from that position and started walking around again. So it was really amazing like that. And I saw things respond to things that I thought in my head. I had little internal monologues or just talking to myself, talking through things, and I could see the contractions get stronger or lighter, depending on kind of what I was saying. So particularly at one point, there was this one point where I went in my head, I said, come on, Waters, let's do this.
Yeah.
Like, it's time to break. And it just spiked double the size of any of the other contractions before it.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Jack Beaumont. I do Crime Club. In Series 1, I spoke to people like this.
Did you not kick a policeman in the head?
Yeah, that was... When was that? I was 17. Wait, was I 17 or 19? I think it might have been 19, actually.
In Series 2, I talked to people like this.
There was a paedophile with one leg. I kicked him clean out his wheelchair. About four of us... we battered him.
And this.
Cheated on your boyfriend to give him gonorrhea? Do you want to go there, or would you rather not?
Yeah, no, I could talk about it.
I have jingles like this. That's Crime Club, where strange people tell stories involving bad behaviour. New episodes out every Monday.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewellery from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But before that, I was doing, guys, I did the no drugs for a while.
Yeah, you had, what was it, paracetamol at 3?
Yeah, so we got it at 11:30, and at 3 o'clock I went, okay, I'll have some paracetamol.
Which is, that's not, I don't care what anyone says, that is not drugs for pregnancy or giving birth. That's what you take if you've got a mild hangover.
Yeah, but I took some.
Yeah, so you took paracetamol.
And then probably about maybe 45 minutes or an hour after that.
It was about 4:30 when you first, when you had a honk on the gas and air.
Yeah, because what I did, I suddenly realised that I was afraid of my waters breaking because I'd been kind of feeling okay through the level and the intensity of the contractions. I had this fear of my water's going to break and it's suddenly all going to change. Yes. And it's going to get scary and really full on and really painful. And I just voiced that. I said, this is how I'm feeling. I think I'd like to try some gas and air.
Yeah.
And then things again sort of ramped up a little bit. So my first suck on the gas and air, I was just like, I am drunk. And I kept relating the feeling. For me, gas and air felt like when you're pissed and you come home and you're leaning on the edge of the toilet seat and you're like, oh, what did I do?
Yeah.
I'm so drunk. I had this one point where with those two elastic bands around my waist with the monitors, I was like, this feels like I'm drunk and I've just woken up only in a skirt, fully naked, going, oh no, what's happened? What have I been doing? Why am I here like this? But that was fine. Like, it was useful to go to that. And then they said, look, do you want to do a vaginal exam if you want one, just to see where you're at?
Yeah.
So that happened at about five.
It's 5 o'clock. It's pretty almost on the dot.
Yeah, and I had to go into the hospital bed with the stirrups and things, and they did an exam and they said, okay, well, there's no cervix left.
Yes.
And in my head, like, from that tiny little cervix that was getting monitored, going, there's none left. So obviously 10 centimetres, that blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I did what I thought was a huge, huge diarrhea shit over everybody, over Emma and Amelia, who were like looking up my vagina.
Emma was literally, her face was a foot away from your, yeah.
Yeah. And I said, did I just do a shit?
No. And what had happened was your waters had broken so, like, aggressively.
Exploded.
They exploded out all over Emma. Yeah. It's like when we were all laughing, but then turn and then you thought you'd done a number two.
I just imagined that it's poo over everybody.
There was no poo at that point.
It was waters. Wasn't poo? Was there poo?
There was a couple of bits now and again. I've not told you about it. There was a couple of moments where, right towards the end, where there was one bit where you were on a little stool.
Oh yeah,
a little poo came out then. It was tiny.
So my waters broke. And then, so that's 5 o'clock. And I think that then means that you're in transition, maybe.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, we're going to let you just go with this for the next hour. And at 6 o'clock, we're going to start actively pushing.
Yes.
And I said, okay, then. I had a new internal monologue, which is the date was the 6th of June, 6-6. And I didn't want her to be born at 6 o'clock. I didn't want her to be a 666 baby. So I was like, right, I have to get this done before 6 o'clock.
Exactly. You're already a witch. You're like a little devil.
Yeah. I have to get this done before 6. And so started like, okay, going into a new zone and trying different positions and using the gas and air. But they realized quite quickly the gas and air wasn't aiding me at this point. I was like, this is happening. And then like, are you actually having a contraction now? And I'm like, no. I'm just making noises and thinking I was doing something else. So they took the gas and air away from me.
Yeah.
And then at 6 o'clock, it was like, okay.
Let's do this.
It's time. So the main instruction for the active pushing was, imagine you're doing the biggest poo you've ever done in your life.
Push down into your bottom, they kept saying.
Push down into your bottom and push, and don't make, if you use too much voice, that's like putting your energy into your voice. You have to put the energy into the pushing. Yeah,
they were saying the trick is to hold your breath, essentially. Push with your breath held. So, because you're not using up any energy releasing air.
Yeah, which I found really tricky, this whole section. And so I was kind of on all fours on the bed thing, and then they put a birthing stool out in the middle of the room, and that was a weird, like, that's so you, as if you're going to the toilet, you sit on that and try and push out from
so
that
you,
angle.
So you did all fours on the bed,
mm-hmm.
birth stool.
Yeah.
Then was that the last one before moving on to?
Yeah, then they moved
on. You tried on your side, remember that? For a bit, they tried some weird, basically what happened was when you're on a stool, they said that she was struggling to come around the bend.
Yeah.
Which I still don't fully understand.
I couldn't understand some of the anatomy of it. And I was like, I don't know how to do this bit. I don't know how to do it. But so they got me, and her heart rate was going up and down a bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't crazy. I mean, I think they just say that to keep your commitment to pushing on. Because I kept checking it, and when they'd say that, it had gone up so much, it was such a minor amount. And it would settle straight away.
Yeah.
So I think, they do that to keep you on your toes and just make sure you're doing it.
I'd said a couple of days before to Carl, we'd watched a bit of Jurassic Park where Julianne Moore has to hang off a building with just one hand. Yeah. And I always see those scenes in films and I get scared because I'm like, I'm not strong enough. I would fall off that building. Got to do some arm strength. And I had a similar feeling in this bit of pushing. I was like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to get her out. I don't know how to do this. And I just forgot as well, we had doctors come and visit us as well, because potentially if I was going to have an epidural.
Yeah, they popped in.
Yeah, and that was something that I kept avoiding, and the anaesthetist came in as well. And so during this, they're like, you have to go onto the hospital bed. We want to try up there.
Yeah.
So I was in the classic on my back stirrups.
Yeah, but that was only for the last bit.
Yeah, 20 minutes.
I would say, I reckon it might have been half an hour.
But this bed, kind of the bottom of it popped out
and
just made a big hole.
Yeah, so I think you got in this, you actually got on your back and in the stirrups at about 6:40.
Yeah, and I did keep checking the time with you.
Yes.
Because now I needed to get past 6 o'clock. Yeah. And into the 7 o'clock range.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I was on my back, then they said, you know, we want to do an episiotomy.
Yes.
And I was like, fine, just do it.
Well, yeah, as I've said, like, you know, I've sort of chatted to a few friends since where, like, they've asked what was it like as a observer,
yeah,
and the partner, and you know, because it had been so chilled really, yeah, up, yeah, until your waters broke, and even after that next hour after your waters broke,
yeah,
was pretty chilled in the sense you were trying some pushing yourself. There, yeah, was no, they weren't really doing much.
No.
They just let you just have this hour to yourself to get prepped, I suppose.
Yeah,
and so up to that point, it had been so much more manageable, mm, than I have heard and seen and thought. And in that last hour, it just does go full on. You, yeah, know? And I mean, it's not full on in a way that I want to scare people. It's just like exactly what Josh Howie said when he goes, it just gets so real. And like, it's so intense, and there's emotion, and there's a noise, and there's just, I don't know, it just feels like you are reaching a crescendo.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, once you were on the stirrups, I stayed up with you.
Yeah.
And was doing that thing of, you know, because they were shouting, push down or don't, like, hold your breath. Yeah. And I could tell that you were struggling.
Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going.
Yeah, I tried to just say versions of that.
Yeah.
In language I thought at that point you'd understand more.
Yeah.
And I was just right in your face and in your ear.
Yeah.
But it was intense, like, just hold it on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was an extra midwife, and I had to push them with my legs, and I had to push.
Oh, is there, yeah, that woman who brought, she brought a towel.
Amina,
yeah. And she, there was a third one and a doctor. And yeah, she did this thing where she rolled a towel and she goes, grab this. And she said, whenever you start a push, just pull me towards you.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was watching this like,
I'd forgotten about proper, that.
Yeah, I'd forgotten actually. But it sounds more, I think I'm making it sound more extreme than it was. It was just, it's literally probably 20-minute period where they were like, we are getting this baby, yeah, out now. What she wants to come out, she's just struggling to get around that little corner, but she's there, she's ready. You could see the head.
Yeah.
I could see the head. I couldn't help have a couple of little looks.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's, you know, it doesn't look graphic. That's weird. It doesn't feel like gory.
Mm.
It just feels like this, that shouldn't be like happen. Like, it doesn't, yeah, make any sense. That it's like your whole that area changes shape.
Yeah,
and you can see something is coming towards it. It's like Jesus. Like, yeah, there was no part of me that was like grossed out. I, yeah, just felt more like confused.
Yeah, I think that's the same as me. Like, I knew it was happening, but I couldn't work out how this made sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also in terms of pain for you, I remember one point they asked if you needed pain relief,
mm,
and this was right in that final 10 minutes where, you know, it's extreme and you're pushing and really making a lot of noise on the pushes, and you said to them, you said, no, it doesn't hurt, I just don't know what, if I'm doing it right.
Yeah.
And that was a really telling moment for, I think people think that bit is going to be the really painful bit.
Yeah.
But actually I think it's just the hardest in terms of the exertion of energy.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing I would get worried about in that, going, am I going to, that was the point with the Jurassic Park falling off the building thing. Like, do I have enough strength to actually do this?
Yes.
Am I powerful enough? Can I actually push this baby out?
Yeah.
Which I did.
Yeah. So I made that, the PCS, they made a little cut,
mm,
which I didn't see, but I did see a sort of slight spray of blood.
Mm-hmm. And I was linked up to a drip at this point as well, with this transalzamic acid or something.
Oh, yeah, which, just to stop any excess
to do with, yeah, clotting and stuff like that.
And then, yeah, they did that little cut, mm, and they went, right, this is it. And you just pushed and she just came out.
Yeah.
It just literally popped out.
And that was at 7:12 p.m.
7:12 p.m.
Got over the 666.
Yes.
And then we had a baby.
We had a baby. And it's that amazing. I don't know. Obviously, I can't imagine what your mental state was like at that point. I can't imagine what it'd be like to be in your head.
Mm.
But what I found so amazing was, this sort of chilled building up to this sort of 6:30 p.m. crazy 30, 40 minutes of intense, come on, we're going to do this. And in the moment she pops out, there's this total calm. just everything just goes boom.
Yeah.
And then they just pop her on you.
Yeah.
And they go about their business.
They were doing so much activity around. I don't know what they were doing.
They were, but it
cleaning
was...
things. It was very calm, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Feel... I suppose the noise. I think they're very aware that they go quite quiet because it's been quite a loud half an hour.
Mm. And so there was a doctor who was stitching me up.
Yes.
Amelia was doing something. Emma was doing something.
I mean, I don't know if you probably didn't see the carnage that was around the floor. Because obviously that bottom of the bed's off.
Yeah.
Everything that's coming out is on the floor, essentially.
Yeah.
And on the nurses. Yeah, like Emma slipped over at one point just before Twyla came out. And it was just, it was just a mess.
But then they put her on me. There was that sound of a little cry.
Yeah.
She didn't do a big noise or anything. And there's all those things that then flash through my mind as well, like when, you know, that some babies are blue or they have to just help them with that first breath or they're crying lots, you know, all those very quickly flash in my head. But then she was just there and she was okay. And they kind of guided her for breastfeeding. I said I wanted to try this baby led, and they're like, no, we'll just do it like this.
Yeah.
Which is fine. When we talked to our breastfeeding person, they said they might not have even understood what I meant by baby led. I've looked at some stuff and they call it biological feeding position. Or something. And then they left us alone.
Yeah.
We had on the birth plan for two, we wanted to be 2 hours by ourselves.
It was Emma and Amelia.
Yeah.
Their shift finished at 8 o'clock, didn't it? So...
That was it as well. At the start of the day, they're like, hopefully we'll get to see this baby before.
And then Emma said she was confident she would. That thing where it was probably about midday.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were 6 centimetres dilated, they said.
Yeah, not 5, actually.
And then she said, I think this baby's going to be out before we finish our shift.
I had that in my head as well because I wanted them to meet Cici.
Yes. And it was that. It was at about 7:12. Out she popped. And they finished up, tied in everything and doing that at 7:45.
Yeah.
And they said their goodbyes. It was lovely. It was really good timing.
Yeah.
But then we were just left to our end. Like, you know, we just left.
You cut the cord.
I cut the cord. I also got, I've got the placenta in a Tupperware box in our freezer. And, but then we were left for like 3 hours, 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Just the three of us.
Yeah. Which was like, again, they really respect, they read the birth plan. And
yeah,
they respected everything and did everything for us that they could.
Yes.
But then it was also the reality because of COVID times that Carl had to go home. And because I had been on getting monitored for my bloods, they wanted me to stay in hospital overnight with her and go to the postnatal unit. So we kind of packed up and got ready to go.
Yeah, you had a shower.
I went and had a shower.
You got really shivery at the end of your shower, so we had to keep put you under the hot water again.
Which was quite intense.
Yeah,
I found that, like, I just got really cold once the shower was finished.
Well, I think I was quite shocked that, you know, they were like, oh yeah, have a shower, because like what you've just been through, I don't know, I thought, let's not have a walking around.
But they offered, they're like, do you want to? And I was considering it, and I was like, yeah, actually.
Yes. So yeah, I helped you into the shower and we, like, washed you and sprayed you down. But yeah, I could see that, yeah, you were just physically very worn out.
And
you?
I was cold, like, it was just cold. The room was cold. The door was open in the shower room. And so I got Carl to pull the emergency thing just so we could get some more towels and kind of wrap me up again.
And once we got the hot water in you for a bit and then just wrapped you in towels, basically. Swaddled you.
And before that, and you put her first nappy on, didn't you? And you put her clothes on.
I dressed her.
Under the guidance of Kiara, who was the next midwife who came on.
Yeah.
And then I was in a wheelchair.
We wheeled you up to the doors of the postnatal ward, and then I just had to say my goodbyes and go home.
I thought you were going to cry so much. I was watching your eyes.
Yeah, but I was, weirdly, I think I was more still in that sort of adrenaline shock of, like, just the day that it's just...
Yeah, yeah.
I just witnessed
But the release and the relief of what had happened.
It's mental. When I came home, I think I texted you that night. Obviously, we were texting now, but I can't remember if I texted you when I did it. But I came home and I just had suddenly started unpacking my bag. And I found the placenta sitting there in a big Tupperware.
Yeah.
I was like, I've got to get it in the freezer. And then there was no room in the freezer. So I took out a big bag of vegetable scraps. And I thought, well, I can't let them go to waste. So I started making some stock.
With the placenta.
And I put the placenta in the freezer where they were. So I found myself literally you know, first child born.
Celebration.
Celebration. Some people go and wet the baby's head. I was at home making stock.
Yeah. And I was in the postnatal ward in a room with three other beds, three other women curtained off with their freshly born babies as well. And I had mine and sort of just left to myself with her.
Yeah. And then just to quickly add a little sad amendment of like the fact that you had to stay in for an extra day as well, because they just wanted to just double check that your blood had gone right back up before letting you out. So I wasn't allowed to visit because you were on the postnatal.
Yeah.
So there was a basically 36 hours afterwards.
Where we were just texting and I was sending photos.
But I sort of, a few mates checked in on me, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
You know, so just because obviously they'd said, how'd it go? And I said, it's great. She's healthy. She's out. And said how amazing you did it. And then I said, and I explained, but yeah, you know, I'm at home now, just waiting to find out when they can come home.
Yeah.
And weirdly, I found it quite easy to sort of work out, sort of say, do you know what, this isn't a bad thing. Because I thought that idea of you two just having 36 hours, just the two of you in a bed together, is a really good, healthy bonding thing.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, is it just a single bed with a cot next to it? No TV, no nothing. Just me and her.
Yeah.
And like, basically, lots of skin to skin, guys. I did loads of skin to skin.
Basically, 2 full days of skin to skin.
Yeah. And I mean, that's still going.
Yeah, she's lying on your belly now.
I've got my boobs out.
Yeah. You've basically had your boobs out for a week.
I thought that was going to be the way, and you know, it's true. It's here. And yeah, so they had to, my bloods were fine. They checked hers as well, and she's got completely normal 275 on the old platelet.
Loads of platelets. She probably nicked all yours. That's why you were so.
She stole my ones as well. I was quite committed to the fact that Carl was going to be doing first nappies and things like that, but
yeah.
I'd had that first meconium one.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky to have missed the bad ones. Yeah.
I think we might follow up with episodes about all this kind of stuff, but.
Yes.
Just got to say that first, we'd seen pictures of what those first poos are supposed to look like. And so like a little tiny poo, this was.
you sent me a photograph.
It was a nap. It was like, I don't know, a cup. Looked like a cup full of molasses. And I just had to, like, I rang the bell because I was like, is this okay? Is it? She's like, oh, there's lots there, isn't there? But it was normal. It's fine that there was that much. But she had to help me clean it up. Well,
yeah, I'm not surprised.
Well, she basically held Twyla while I cleaned her.
Yes.
And there
now
you
we
go.
Now we have a baby.
Now we have a baby, and she's been sleeping on me for the whole podcast. And this is, do you know what? This is not even her first podcast. She was on a podcast yesterday.
She wasn't on a podcast. I was just doing a little thing with Julian Dean. And I shouted to bring her in so he could see her.
Yeah.
That was all it was.
Yeah.
She's appeared on one.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, it's been a week, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I can't believe your recovery. Not that I'm not saying you're fully recovered, there's still sort of a physical, you know, recovery to be done. But in my head, when I watched what you did and what you went through, you know, that was I'd rather get hit by a car. And I'm not saying that because it looked painful, that, but it was just so intense and amazing and like, it's just such a full-on day. But that I can't even begin to compute what it would be like to go through. But you sort of, you know, you came home Monday and we've had it's been pretty, obviously it's not normal because we're not sleeping because we're, obviously she basically feeds, sleeps. Wakes up, feeds. Yeah, it's almost every 2 hours.
Yeah.
But we're still like, I'm cooking all the food, and you're totally just like.
One thing is, whenever, if I'm trying to feed, if I'm feeding her, and Carl makes me laugh, that's one of the funniest.
Yeah.
It's just how much she just jiggles around and has to get used to that.
But we've been out for two big walks with her in the pram, and like it just feels like I'm very surprised with. We've managed to sort of have moments of normal life within a week of having a baby.
I mean, we're fucking sitting here recording a podcast.
Yeah, with her just sitting on you. But I think, again, we're very lucky that she's totally healthy.
Yeah.
She's not a big crier.
She weighed 3.4 kilos.
Yes.
So 7 pounds 5. So she's not massive Janet, everybody. She's just normal, a very Twyla. Little, lovely little Twyla.
And she's lovely. She is a lovely...
Yeah.
Like, you know, obviously you can't be objective about your own baby, but we just keep looking at her and just going like, oh, she's so lovely. she's mostly super chilled.
Yeah. But I think we've had some challenges already in the first week, and I think we may as well record again if we find another time. I was thinking maybe going up to sort of that full 42 weeks.
Yeah, just to give you a rundown of the first 2 weeks of having a... The first week has had a couple of moments actually where little baptisms of fire.
Yeah.
So it'd be good to talk about them in depth, I think.
Yeah. This is just mainly our birth story.
Mainly that we've got a baby.
We got one. That was what I kept wanting to share, that Ghostbusters. I always think about Ghostbusters when they get the first phone call. The lady goes, we got one.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing was I made sure when Carl went home that he told the Zoom party people that the Zoom party wasn't going to happen.
So I sent an email at...
1:30 a.m.
with a picture of Twyla saying hi everyone, and we might have to postpone tomorrow's Zoom party because this little person arrived.
Yeah, a number of my friends said she's a little Norris baby. Yeah, she wanted to come to the party.
Doesn't want to miss the party.
But she'd have to wait because we're going to have that another day instead. Yes. So
anyway, there she is. She's here.
Thanks for listening.
Next episode we'll actually do a little, right, this is your first week of having a child. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's something that we'd actually done a lot of research on.
Mm-hmm.
And like especially like Viv and Josie, they recommended some good books to read about their initial stages.
Yeah.
Because it is full on, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've just suddenly got a little human.
Yeah.
And you have to just... everyone knows that, but it's a really intense and amazing.
And at the same time, genuinely, she's only been here for just over, she's been with us for a week and a day.
Yeah.
It also feels like forever.
Yeah. Not in a bad way, but in like a sort of, it feels like, she's ours, isn't she?
She made a little noise. I just put the microphone to her, but she didn't make any more.
She's not. Hopefully she'll take after us. Yeah. She goes off and does something professional and financially lucrative.
She can be whoever she wants to be, man. Whoever she wants to be. So thank you for listening. We will talk to you again next week.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
My mate bought a toaster. We go through celebrities' Amazon purchase histories so you don't have to. Keep calm and love Dom Jolly novelty keyring and fridge magnets.
Yeah, I love that.
The G-spot.
The good vibrations, guys.
Green dot laser sight rifle gun scope.
I've bought that quite a lot of times, I think.
Right, okay. The sex doctor's guide to keeping it hot.
Ah, interesting.
Did another child come along 9 months later?
Yeah.
Loads of great apps up now, and new ones dropping every Monday. That's My Mate Bought a Toaster from Great Big Al.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.